Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And along those lines is the understanding of our physical embodiment. Who are we as beings in this incarnational experience? Who are we embodied? And one of my favorite teachers of embodiment and a good friend is Luba Evans. Welcome, Luba.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. I'm so happy to be here on the show.
Yeah, you know, your work has sort of been, and of course you can interview me about my work as we talked about as well, but your work has been about, would you call it tantra, sexuality? How would you define your work?
It definitely is rooted in tantra, specifically in non-dual tantric tradition. But at the same time, I'm also using many principles from Kabbalah as well as Sufi teaching. And the goal of my work was always to bring the soul back to every aspect of our life, as well as bringing in all masculine and feminine aspects together, inner aspects as well as outer aspects in the world.
But let me ask you that something about that. When you say non-dual, are you still separating the world into masculine and feminine? Because isn't that a duality? You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. It's a wonderful question. So I perceive it as a dance. I perceive it as a dance where the masculine is becoming feminine in its core, like yin and yang symbol. And feminine is becoming masculine. And it is in those edges that life really comes in the brightest colors. And when I say non-dual, I mostly mean that there is no separation between subject and object, meaning that what's happening in our inner world is really a reflection of the outer world, and the outer world is a reflection of our inner world.
I see. And the physical world is a reflection of our spiritual world, in a sense, then, right?
Exactly. As above, so is below.
Right. So you, part of your work, as I experience, is getting people in their bodies because, you know, we're here to experience embodiment, you know, life here.
Exactly. Exactly. And bringing the prayer into the body.
Yeah. Talk about that. What do you mean by the prayer? The prayer.
Yeah. So by blood, I'm Jewish, and I grew up in Russia where there was no religion whatsoever. And when I came to the United States, I tried out Judaism. And when I went to synagogues and I had a very strong spiritual quest, I always felt that the prayer is very heady. That it's only happening in the head while everyone is walking around in this body that they don't really respect or know. And it didn't feel satisfying.
So you didn't feel satisfied with the understanding of this relationship to the body, you're saying. There was no context for that. Would you say? Luba? Luba. Hello. Hello, hello. Luba. Are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it didn't feel satisfying because it didn't include my whole being, especially being a woman and my sexuality. I did not want to give up my sexuality or being a woman for spirituality.
Right. Of course, because why should you? Spirituality and sexuality are related, but people don't talk about that or didn't talk about that up until very recently. So how did you manage to bring the two together?
Well, my first meditation teacher was a Raja yoga teacher, and I was studying that for about 5 years, and I kept getting out of the body until first I came to Barbara Brandheeler, who said, "You are completely out of body." And I said, "Of course I am. Why would I want to be in the body? Body is so unreliable. It wants all kinds of bad things. It ages." And I was so against it. But she said, well, honey, if you want to live this life as an enlightened being, you got to get back in. And I started searching for the spiritual discipline that provided that. And that was Tantra. And then I went all over the world, Ellen. You know, I studied pretty much in every tantric school on the planet.
But define Tantra, because so many people, and I've done many shows about it, but so many people are so confused about Tantra. Is it sexual? Are you supposed to transform the sex? You know, is it great? Is it good to have sex? I mean, so many people don't know what Tantra is. And
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it is such a vast subject. And I actually love the fact that Tantra is so mysterious. I think that if it had a clear definition, it wouldn't even be Tantra. Tantra is about things being alive in the moment. So I have to say, every time I give definition of Tantra, it's a new definition. So let's see what happens now.
Great. I like that spontaneous part of you, just to kind of, boom, come on out. And so go ahead. Try it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so to me, first of all, Tantra is about truth. And truth on the level of the body, the truth that reflects itself in every aspect of the being. For example, there are many disciplines which ask us to repress certain feelings, emotions, desires, or drives. And Tantra includes everything. Tantra is not afraid of anything. Tantra, in fact, on the contrary, allows us to feel that our whole being is divine, including sex. Mm. And is sex a part of Tantra? Definitely everything is a part of Tantra. Is sex absolutely necessary to practice Tantra? I don't think so. There are a lot of tantric practitioners in India who never even thought about having sex.
Well, so what is it? I know you're saying it, but I'm not really getting, let's say I didn't know anything about it. Well, how would I practice Tantra in one way?
Yeah. So to practice Tantra, first of all, it's important to establish a very strong mind-body bridge. Like, for example, you're feeling your right hand. You can easily sense your right hand because you're always using it. So your consciousness has a bridge, direct bridge to this right hand. But if I ask you to feel your left ear, it's going to be much more complicated. So in tantric practice, what we do is we feel everything that's happening in the body. So it's almost like we're a salad and our consciousness is a dressing on the salad. And the body is just oozing awareness and consciousness. Mm-hmm. So imagine what that gives us. First of all, we know what's happening with us. We can't repress it. We can't lie. On the other hand, we can also influence the body. So, for example, if we want to feel certain currents in the body, we can direct them. We can purify them. And so what we can do is we can charge ourselves up from the lower chakras and generate certain energies, awakening Kundalini in the lower chakras. And having that mind-body bridge, we can experience that Kundalini in our whole being. And Kundalini is a magical, mysterious, electric force that goes through us when we become awakened.
Wait, so there's many things. Let's start with this idea that the body is oozing consciousness. So if your body is oozing consciousness and you come together with another person who's aware that their body's oozing consciousness, you get a lot of oozing going on.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. It's very exciting. This is where the ecstasy comes from. When two people practice Tantra, what I think is that it's important that they're more in love with the divine and they're in love with each other. And so when this consciousness comes into a meeting, it is a celebration of the divine in us.
Well, some people say that takes 20 years of practice or maybe it doesn't take practice. Maybe it's our natural state to begin with, you know. There's many ways. How do you approach it in your practice?
Yeah, I feel that there are some people who are actually naturally tantric. And then there are some people who are born really well, we are born wired for pleasure. We are born wired for electricity. And many of us go, most of us go through stress of life, and we lose that connection with the body. We lose that connection with the divine energies and with Kundalini power. On the other hand, I also feel that I do believe in past lives. Mm. And I feel that some people are born with, in Buddhism, we call it sanskaras. And those are the grabbing, ego-grabbing tendencies from previous lives. And so when they come in, they have to do work purifying themselves, mm. letting go of this grabbing of the ego and getting back into the connection of the soul and the body. So I think it takes different time for everyone.
Well, you're one really. Person, I think, who has very much present in your body. You're, when I'm see you and around you, you have an excitement and an energy, and you emanate that awareness to people around you. So I think you're doing the perfect work in expanding people's awareness of this joyful, ecstatic part of their being. And now you're taking it to another level, right? You're taking it.
Yes.
To, yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yes. So I have a lot of training in tradition of Osho, and I lived in India, in Pune, in Osho Ashram, and I noticed that a lot of people are actually dysfunctional in life after practicing a lot of Tantra.
Oh, really?
What
dysfunctional? Yeah. How? They don't work. They don't. I mean, how?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, really, they didn't know how to be a part of the mainstream world anymore. They didn't want to be a part of that world, but they didn't know how to create a sustainable businesses of their own, mm. because they were so in touch with ecstatic states that they let go of another part, which is, I feel, the masculine part, which is the part that is the inner witness, the observer, visionary who can really see several steps ahead. And so I saw a lot of people in the gap, and the gap was that they didn't fully transition yet into, let's say, a life of a monk or into a life of somebody who doesn't need anything, but at the same time they could not be in that mainstream, and so they were in some kind of a limbo. And I realized that when people come to me to our retreats, I facilitate a glimpse into oneness, and it's an ecstatic glimpse. It is so wonderful. And people go back to the busy streets of New York, and then they're completely lost. They don't know what to do. They can't go back to their office.
Oh. So what do you do? Then how did you solve that problem?
Yeah, so I was thinking about it, and I realized that actually the real marriage between masculine and feminine creates a visionary leader of a new type. And then I saw that there is actually academic research on that. There is this whole type of leader called resonant leader. And that is a type of leader who is fully in touch with the feminine, meaning empathic, meaning the leader leads by inspiration, caring about, let's say, employees or colleagues, really caring, really finding their strengths, and at the same time also knows the boundaries, also knows how to set up structures. So to me, it's like teaching people structured improvisation. Structure comes from the masculine, mm. and improvisation, the flow, comes from the feminine. And I actually feel that those are the leaders that we need right now, because really in this situation where we are with planetary emergency, we really need people who do care, and who have a heart, and who do want to change the earth for the best. And we need those people to be empowered and to know also how to lead people and even how to do accounting. Mm. You know, so it really brought me into the space where I started developing a program for visionary leadership based on tantric principles.
Great. So is this the Anima Mundi Institute you're creating? Anima Mundi.
So Anima Mundi, yes, Anima Mundi Institute has different courses, and visionary program is a part of it. It is still and development, but that is the pinnacle program for the Institute.
So the Institute is about taking these people who have had these other types of awareness experiences and putting them in a practical world. Is that what the Institute is dedicated to, or something?
It's a part of it. And also the Institute also has a project. It's called Co-Create Conference. And this project brings together the wisdom holders of the earth, like you, Alan, and leaders of exponential technology. And that bridging is specifically created so that spiritual people were able to receive the education that is so necessary for them to ground and to actually make the shift happen, make it a reality, and at the same time to educate the leaders of technology in terms of the higher consciousness and wisdom of the earth. So to me, that is the ultimate marriage between masculine and feminine of the planet.
Great. No, I like that. I'm on board. I'm supporting that. So if you were going to interview me, and you can now, about like how I might could, contribute to this.
Yes.
If you want to, you can. Or we could do it right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So first of all, Ellen, I just want to say that you are such a pioneer of the work of the consciousness. And you've been always embodied more than probably most people that I know, because it is so easy to lose that alignment to the highest divine vibration when we live in the world, like you live in Manhattan, I know, and it's pretty busy, and the pace of life is so fast, and it's so demanding, and yet you have been able to somehow maintain that very, very high alignment. And I just want to acknowledge that and applaud you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I feel like I'm the piece of the yin inside the yang, you know, all that.
Yeah.
You need a little piece of the of that, you know. And I also get fed by the activity, but thank you for saying that. I try to stay in balance. So, yeah, that's great.
Absolutely, yeah. And I also know that your area of exploration is really vast, and because I've been following you for many years, and so I know that you can bring in the light of consciousness into subjects like extraterrestrial consciousness and UFOs and Tantra, and that is really, really unprecedented. So I would love to ask you, first of all.
I just want to say about that. When I say my New Realities website is about UFOs and sexuality, I say we go from the outer, as far out as you can go, as far in as you can go. That's what I say, you know.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Exactly. Huge outreach. Yes. So my question is, my first question to you is, where do you think we are going? Where are we evolving? It is very apparent that our consciousness is expanding. So what is that trend that you see?
Well, that is what I've been trying to figure out since I've gotten into, let's call this a business, this field, this awareness. Where are we going? And I think it has to do with using our brains in different ways. I think the prefrontal cortex, the creative aspect, is opening up, and we're becoming more creative beings. You know, in the television age, for instance, everyone sat back and just watched. Now, with computers and internets, people are demanding a level of interaction. So at least they want you to like their video or their comment, and it sort of demands a little bit more from people. So we're not just, you know, a passive, you know,
consumer
level of, right. So at least we have a little bit. I mean, that's very, you know, still it's not enough, but it's a little bit of activity for the masses, a little more common participation. And that also shows up in how our ability to feel more. So where we're going is, as this whole like post 2012 era is evolving, we are activating the dormant centers of our brain by new a cosmic placement to come online, if you want, and to feel more, to have more compassion, to feel each other, to be more sensitive to energy. We're evolving into a greater capacity to feel what I call the flowering of humanity. We haven't, we haven't really flowered. We've survived. We've created institutions that are now in the way, but we haven't become real human beings. We haven't unified in one consciousness. So we're about to flower. That's how I see it.
Okay. And thank you so much. I love that term, flowering of humanity. It's really, really precious.
Okay. Okay, Luba, so you were saying to me, yes, that's a term I came up with, is flowering, because I think our evolution is about to take off. So what else were you going to ask me?
Yeah, I have a couple of very important questions for you. First of all, it seems like a lot of structures in our thinking are now being washed out. For example, our gender identification, many people are looking for new lifestyles, many people are trying out different relationship structures, and there are some even exploration, maybe for now in the movies, that people are trying to even bridge into relationships with non-organic life, like in the movie Her or Transcendence. So my question is, what do you think about that?
Well, maybe I'm old-fashioned or something, but I think the energetics of two human beings coming together and accelerating the frequency because they're aligned in their mind, in their spirituality, in their emotional capacity, in their physical compatibility, I think that is still... for me, the most precious gift. And other things can come in, like these non-organic relationships. But I think that's an avoidance, actually. I think it's an avoidance of intimacy. And I love the movie Her, but it was a demonstration of the fabrication of our loss of contact. And you know, if I didn't have a physical contact with you, Luba, in this conversation, our conversation would be totally different. But because I'm aware of who you are in your physical embodiment as a being, I feel a greater connection to that. So I don't think there's a real substitute for the organic nature of human relationships, if you want to.
Wonderful, yeah. Thank you. And okay, great. And my next question, which is connected to this one, I know that you were a part of Immortality Conference.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was mesmerized by that whole idea. And what is your take on that?
Well, it seems like if you go through many of the mystical traditions, they all have evidence of the body being transformed into light. So, yeah, people can talk about immortality and physical immortality, but I think the idea is to transmute the body through a higher frequency. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but actually your body wants to do this. Your body has a light bioluminescence photonic process in each cell, has the capacity for light. So every tradition has examples of that kind of luminosity, this igniting. You can talk about the rainbow body in the Tibetan tradition. You can talk about the burning from a fire from within in the Castaneda Toltec tradition. The ancient traditions talk about ascension. So there's elements of this as a possible human potential. And I say, if that is a possible potential, why not investigate it? You know, and it takes an evolved consciousness to consider that it is even possible for your body to access this immortal gene code, these ascension codes, to awaken its light frequency and transmute it. So I just look at that possibility. I consider it and say, you know, why not? So my whole thing about new realities is being open to as many outrageous ideas to consider, you know, and then mm-hmm. people can reject it or accept it. But let's not reject anything because it seems too absurd. Let's look at the possibility of everything, and then we can decide, is it just my conditioning that says this is absurd or ridiculous? Or if I consider this, maybe there is a part that can access, like I say, some new reality that makes these things possible. So yeah. Immortality is mm-hmm. a possibility. And it's actually, you know, if you believe the ancient Taoist traditions, it's happened. It's happened in the Egyptian times. It's happened, you know, many, many mystical traditions have this awaken. And you have to be a pretty high master, of course, to achieve that. But let's open up to it.
Yeah, and I love that approach. I totally share that. And I want to throw in another pretty out there idea. There is a really big monastery in Russia of Leia Yoga. And there are thousands of people who are part of that monastery. And they claim that in 18 years, they can teach people how to develop this rainbow body. And they're supporting an initiative which is called 2045, in which scientists claim that by year 2045, they will develop a way for consciousness to have an avatar robotic body, which will allow consciousness to travel like email in the blink of an eye and occupy wow. another avatar. Yes.
And that is great.
Okay.
I believe that. Yeah. What is Leia Yoga, though? What is
Leia Yoga is that, oh my God, this is so interesting. Leia, that term Leia means dissolving. It's the yoga of dissolving.
Because I have to say, in the Chinese tradition, the Yellow Emperor, the tradition, the story about the Yellow Emperor, who was like the first great emperor of China, after making love with his 1,000 concubines, was able to dissolve his body like that. So there's some tantric aspect of that. And also, also in the story of Mary Magdalene and Jesus, if you want to believe that, there was a tantric connection. Maybe they were partners, and Mary Magdalene activated the life force, as some people say in the Magdalene manuscripts, that Mary Magdalene activated the life force in Jesus's crucified body to bring life back into the body and resurrect it. So it was through that male-female connection that that those types of aspects or immortal aspects were created. And the same is true of the Isis Osiris story. When Isis collected the parts of Osiris's body, she laid on those parts. The last part was the phallus. And through that, she brought Osiris back into life. And some people say they actually inhabited the same body. She became Isis Osiris. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm just throwing in that tantric element or that Absolutely. Sexual active, because sex is the life force, right?
Exactly.
So we're talking about life force. We're talking about immortality. I mean, these are far out ideas, but what if we combine the two and use the tantric practices to open up the, like you say, the kundalini, accelerate the body to higher frequencies that activate the endocrine gland system that vibrate our chakras to access, you know, other dimensions. So,
absolutely, I always believe that tantra can do it. You know, there are so many different ideas about the origin of Tantra. And one of the ideas is that actually it wasn't originated in India, but that it was originated in Egypt. And it was used specifically to be transported to other dimensions through a portal.
I believe that. You know, the hardest thing I feel when you use the sexual energy to activate higher frequencies is to not leak that energy out and go to the lower chakras, but, you know, maintain the kind of sexual charge as it raises up through the body. The impulse is to release it. But, you know, in India, they have these pictures of these gurus riding the tiger or sitting on a tiger skin. And that is symbolic of them having conquered their animal nature and has raised the kundalini up. So, you know, as far as tantra immortality and practice and acceleration, it's a practice to increase this vibratory frequency and not go to the old habits of acting out the lower
frequency. It's
not about denial.
Yeah.
It's not about denial, but it's like using the energy at its highest, most finest frequency. And that's a practice.
Exactly. Because I can see from my own teaching and experiences that it is hard to maintain very high levels of energy for somebody who is not trained to do that. People, after a very enlightening experience, tend to immediately want to drop back, let's say, to a steak or a beer or something to just land in the lower frequencies to feel at more at home. So
right,
the path... Yes?
Yeah, so the path... No, you say the path...
Yeah, I just want to say that the path has to be carefully orchestrated. That's why there was this notion that actually Tantra has to be taught by a real master, that it is a dangerous path.
Well, it's also about if you can't what?
If you cannot do it, then all this power that is generated by you will come into the second and first chakra.
Right. I was going to say it's about pulling the energy up, you know, and it's like the masters say, it's like even if you've had, let's say, a great sexual experience, it's like to go away from the table hungry, still with that energy. So you've had some great sexual experience, but instead of like leaking it out, you separate while that intensity of longing and passion is still there, and this is one technique, and you feel it, but you don't go to the lower chakras. You feel that intensity and you raise it up. It's like getting up from the table while you're still hungry creates the best digestion. But, you know, I'm not telling people to go into denial. I'm just saying this is one practice to get up from the table or to get up from, you know, lovemaking while there's still the intensity of that passion, so you can bring that internally and to raise the frequency that way. That takes a lot of work, though. That takes willpower.
Absolutely. You know? Many people ask about the ejaculation techniques. Specifically, there is a notion that when a man practices Tantra, he shouldn't be ejaculating and releasing the semen into the woman's yoni. And I was thinking about it for several years, and it never felt right to me. And finally, I was really blessed by meeting Prasanna Paranjapi, who is a doctor, Ayurvedic doctor, and who represents a very old Brahmin's lineage in India, who actually shared a secret with me, which I would love to share with the audience, because I think it's...
Yes, because I just want to say that's always like... should I or shouldn't I? You know, it's like, it's always been like, what is the best, most vital thing? So yeah, please share your secret. Absolutely.
Yeah. The only thing is that it is not very easy to implement, but in theory, he said that it was erroneous to think that the man has to retain everything. What really has to happen is that the man allows the fluid to come out and to nourish the feminine with his masculine, but after the feminine is nourished, the whatever comes out has to be kind of sucked back in. And
into the penis, into...
Yes.
I mean, up in... You mean so you ejaculate out and then you suck it back in?
Yeah. Even if it's done energetically with the intention, even that could be an interesting eternity like exchange between masculine and feminine.
Well, I've heard that the really practiced Taoist practitioners could stick their penis in a glass of wine and pull that into their bodies and then sort of piss that out. But that was also just a practice for pulling in the yin energies, the female fluids in, because the yin of the female fluids accelerates or highlights the yang of the male energies. So there's many stories about that. And yeah, it's not easy, but you know, it is a practice that can be done, I'm sure.
The mixture of masculine and feminine, bringing that back in, that feels really divine to me.
Right, the mixture of the red and white essences.
Exactly. Yes. I even wrote a poem about that.
Oh, what is that poem? What is that?
It's like about red and white drop, meet blessed and cursed. That's just a quote from the poem. Yeah. Mm.
Well, would you ingest that? Would you take that in, like drink it? Would that be something that you recommend?
Well, if it's possible, I'm sure it takes a lot of training. But yes, that is the ultimate. Like, that's what I would recommend ultimately for an advanced practitioner.
Definitely. And that also creates a frequency, right? Tell me what, if someone was to do that, what would happen? What would be the effects on their body?
So what happens also, I want to talk a little bit about Amrita in this context.
So yes, please.
Yes, so Amrita, or in Sanskrit it's called Amrut, is the nectar of immortality. So there is this old Indian legend about creation of the world when gods and demons were fighting for the nectar of immortality. And at the end of the story, Shiva, who is the originator of Tantra, actually, he saved the world by drinking the poison out of the ocean. And so the nectar of immortality was brought in by Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the goddess of abundance. So she brought it to the world. And now the world can enjoy immortality. Talking about immortality, by the way. So that nectar consists of something which is in Ayurveda called ojas. Ojas are just particles of light which are being generated when we practice with the intention to serve the divine. So those particles of light, they show up in everything after we practice. They show up in a way that our skin starts to glow. There is a certain taste to that amrita, to that nectar of immortality after we practice. So when we start moving the energy with the intention to serve the divine, and we start mixing the feminine and masculine energy, the amrita starts to get generated in the body. And it is a really ecstatic feeling. And Amrita goes...
How do we do that? Oh, no, I'm just wondering, how do we get that that mixture through this mixing of fluids, you're saying?
Well, mixture of fluids is not the only component of the practice. The real component of the practice is coming in together and creating one orbit, one energetic orbit. And the orbit doesn't only go from one genital to another. It goes through the whole body. The orbit goes up the spine, and male chakras and female chakras are talking to each other. So there is a connection on every level. It's kind of a complicated picture. So when the orbit starts going through both practitioners, and by the way, it's also possible to practice it individually, imagining that you also have feminine and masculine in yourself. But when the orbits of energy, when you start feeling that orbit, then Amrita starts to get generated. And what's important is also to do certain exercises like Vajroli and Ashwini, which are the exercises which do generate that sexual energy in the root chakra and in the sacral, in the second chakra. And so when a man, for example, gets excited, and he can get excited by will, let's say, by generating this the sexual energy through Vajroli and through Ashwini, the idea is that he brings this energy up. And there is a special thing in Ipsilu Tantra called Cobra Breath. I am not allowed to disclose the whole mechanism.
I was initiated into the Cobra Breath by Sunyata, Master Sunyata. So I know about where'd you learn the Cobra Breath?
Well, I'm a Ipsilu Tantra teacher.
Oh, okay.
Right. I just know it's not. I'm just not allowed to disclose that technique. But the technique is about orbiting and knowing how to use the locks in the lower chakras and how to move that energy through the body in order to produce that amrita. So the truth is, ejaculation is not even necessary. Tantric interaction can happen without it. Amrita can be generated without it. It can even be generated and practiced at a distance. But when we come into a full contact, then there are some additional bonuses of tantric practice. Like, for example, tantric kiss, which is forehead to forehead, which is super ecstatic. Or this exchange of fluids, which is the next level. And that is definitely... Well, what happens is that we come into expanded cosmic consciousness when we practice deeply.
Why don't we teach a course on immortality and tantra, me and you, at one of your conferences? Yeah, let's do that.
That sounds just fabulous. That sounds fantastic. Yes.
Wow. No, thank you for that beautiful information. I can feel your passion and I can feel the truth of those realities.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have been a really good seeker, you know. Mm. I was not satisfied with just like one idea or one take on things. I come from a family of scientists, so I have a very strong masculine in me as well. And I went to different schools, and different schools offered different techniques and different approaches. And so I combined them in something that made full sense to me and felt very at home with the universe, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and you're putting it together in a way that people can hear it and access it. You're making it, very accessible to everyone, and it doesn't have to be some weird thing where you have to go to India, you know, and live at some, you know, awful ashram to...
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, Ellen, you know, when I was in India, I was this girl on a mission looking for a tantric master. And then somebody told me, hey, you go to Europe. Best tantra teachers are not in India anymore.
Well, I don't know. There's great teachers everywhere, and it's about discovering them. And so anyway, but what is coming up? Because you have your institute, but you told me there's some, you interviewed me. I mean, just here, we can do more of that. But tell me what's coming up. As you said, there's big conferences coming up, online conferences.
Yeah, we are creating this online conference called Co-Create, which will bring together the leaders in the field of consciousness, and we can call them spiritual leaders or interfaith dialogue. And we're also reaching out to the people who are mostly in Silicon Valley and people who are envisioning a very different future than what we are used to. And I can tell you that we are already in a very different future. For example, our children already will have all of their life documented on Facebook, and their photographs don't fade and won't fade. We already have children who are being raised by iPods and iPhones, and that has never happened before. And this is just the beginning. So what these people are saying is that we are facing something called augmented reality, where we are going to be able to project, let's say, a Google map onto a physical mountain or onto a street out of our eyeballs, you know. Or there are these inventions which allow now to operate a computer with the power of thought alone. The implications of that are immense. For example, if I go to a Chinese restaurant and see a menu in Chinese, and I'm plugged in wirelessly to some kind of a translation program, I'll be able to read that menu. If I go to
the other,
yeah,
I just throw the other aspect of that is like if you have these Google glasses, you can look at someone, the facial recognition is incredible. Then you could know, you see a stranger on the street, you can know everything about them as far as their, you know, what's online, their online profile, just by looking at them.
Exactly. Or you can plug into a Chinese face reading program and their whole psychological profile is also going to be revealed.
Oh, that's great. Yes.
Right?
So, but it's in a way it's good because now is a time for no more secrets, right? So it's
exactly. Yes.
I don't care if people know everything about me. I don't have anything to hide, I don't think.
See, that's another tantric principle, right? Transparency. And as I said in the beginning, the truth, right? The transparency, the truth. We have nothing else to hide. Nothing. We're not repressing anything. We admit, yes, there are certain desires, certain fears. In this tradition, we own it. We're okay with that. But what we look at is we take those low vibrations and we transmute them and we burn them on the oven of the heart. We transmute them into service. Because honestly, right now, we are all of us, our fellow travelers who just really have to take care of our Mother Earth. You know, we came to that point. So right. I think it's very important.
And I like what you're saying because I think technology is a tool. It doesn't have to disconnect us. It can actually connect us, connect the world in a very vital, significant way. And I think it gives us space for, in a sense, increased spirituality. You know, it's related to, you know, the first mass communication system was the telegraph in the 1840s. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. The first worldwide phenomenon where the world was really connected. And at that same time, there was a spiritual uprising. The spiritualism movement began in the U.S. right at the same time that the telegraph was, you know, being used for worldwide news. So there's something about these parallel paths of spiritual evolution and technological evolution that seem to go together. So when we had the telegraph, people were connected non-locally. And what we're going through now in this current technological revolution is even a higher access to this non-local reality, which gives us tools and symbols and means of accessing the non-local reality inside our own consciousness. So I
Yeah, I just want to say that also in our tradition, we learn how to hold things sacred, how to hold things in our world, everything that surrounds us, the clothing, the food that we eat, our partners, our work, sacred. So I suggest that we can learn how to keep the technology sacred as well. And if we do keep technology sacred, it is definitely going to work for us.
How do we do that? How would we keep technology?
Well, okay, so there is this idea which I learned actually in India studying Ayurveda, old Indian science. And the idea is this, that the scientist had to first develop respect for the elements, let's say for fire, for water, before he was allowed to learn how it works. It is exactly the same principle that was used in Kabbalistic practices in the 17th century. So what I suggest is that something like this could be brought into the attention of the engineers and programmers, that the word meditation already doesn't scare them. That's great. The word yoga is already like part of the regular life. So wouldn't it be wonderful to teach them how to hold the tools of their work or the ideas in respect as sacred? I personally, for example, when I use a computer, I always personalize it. I have a piece of art attached to it. You know, I touch it with care. I am thankful to it. And Yeah, I think that this is something that we can teach people.
Well, I like that idea because, you know, people like Marshall McLuhan said our technology is really an extension of us.
Absolutely.
So my computer, yes, of course, it's a machine that you plug it in, but I am using it to expand my reach and to create contacts worldwide that wasn't available even 20 years ago. So in a sense, it's not the technology that's sacred. And for me, it's the use of the technology and what it can do for consciousness that is sacred, you know?
Yes.
That's how I see.
Absolutely. But I also want to extend a little bit the metaphor that I used in the beginning of our conversation about the dressing, which is the consciousness, and the salad, which is the body. So what if we think of technology also as that body, and we're touching that with our consciousness? Right? So it's a mind-body bridge, but body also includes another, some not only organic body, any body.
Any physical form, you're saying, and the physicality of form, the physical world. Of course, everything in the computer is made from the earth as well. So, you know, it is that. So just to wrap up, you're saying some beautiful things, and it's been a great exchange because, you know, we've both done our own different avenues of research that intersect and weave together. So I know we're going to do some great courses and things together, Luba.
Wonderful. Yes. And we always wanted to. I know it was always somehow like lingering. Yeah.
So just tell us what's coming up for you, like in the next, you know, few months, and what how we can all celebrate these new ideas together.
Yeah, wonderful. So first thing is that the new website, animamundiinstitute.com, will be launched. And then I'm coming up with a course for women's empowerment. That course brings women in touch with their wild and wise feminine magic. And that course is called Magnetic Woman. It's an online 7-week course, which will be launched sometime in May. And then there are going to be many other developments. And of course, as always, we're going to have an amazing year at Galeana Retreat, upstate New York. And hopefully, Alan, you'll be able to make it.
And yeah, let's do something up there. Let's definitely do a... I'll do a course on new realities and accessing ET consciousnesses or something like that, okay?
That would be fabulous also because that place is so special. The vibration there is very high. There is a real temple and it's secluded and it's just so perfect for this work. And the temple will be honored by your presence.
Thank you. So that website is Galeana. How do you spell that?
GaleanaRetreat.com. GaleanaRetreat.com.
Okay. Any final questions you want to ask me?
Well, I guess my next question is, when are we going to see each other? You're coming back to New York, I know, and you're in Australia.
Yes, it's been great being here in Australia. I've met a lot of amazing people. So maybe March, April, will you be back in New York in April, March, April?
Yes, okay. I'll be back.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. And you do coaching as well and individual sessions and group sessions?
Yes. I do individual sessions and I also travel all over the world and teach at different places and retreats. So, my name is Luba Evans. You can Google me. I'm everywhere, I think.
Everywhere. And you have your home base, of course, at your beautiful retreat center. Yeah, I definitely want to go up there. So maybe we'll do something like in May or June, okay?
Sounds wonderful. And thank you so much. And I also feel it's so exciting that you're in Australia. I'm now in Miami. We're connecting through technology, right?
And
masculine and feminine and bringing in these ideas of immortality. We are so embodying our talk. I love that.
Thank you for reaching out and connecting. And yes, we will definitely do something. Maybe we'll go up to Montreal together or something like that. Okay?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, Ellen, and be in touch.
All right, I will. You can email me after this. But I'll just say goodbye. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to the lovely Luba Evans. Please check out all her websites, Anima Mundi and Galeana. And Galeana and all the great things she is in creating here. You know, Anima Mundi is the soul of the world. So this is taking the embodiment to a whole other level. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and you can reach me at newrealities.com. And thanks for listening today.